Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. A set-aside prayer on page 46, paragraph 1. To a God of your own understanding, please set aside everything we think we know about ourselves, about our disease, about the Big Book, the 12 steps, the program, the fellowship, and all spiritual terms, and especially you, God, so that we may now have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please help us see the truth. Tradition 5, long form. Each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 12 and 12 Traditions Book, page 150. So I can hand the meeting over tonight. Our first speaker is Valerie from Cogra.
Thank you, Martin. Hi, everyone. I'm Valerie. I'm an alcoholic and speaking to you from beautiful Bayside, which is a local government area of concern. And I'm actually in isolation because my husband came into contact with somebody with COVID. So I'm not allowed out till next Saturday. So this is a bit of a welcome break from the usual routine of, getting up, going to work, not watching a bit of Netflix. Nothing very exciting going on. I've been asked to speak on this tradition on a personal level and also with my experience at group level. I just want to let you know I'm far from an expert on the traditions. I don't think any of us really are. I think we can only speak on our personal experience. So just letting you know, this is the way I see this particular tradition. I've got some notes because for me, there's nothing worse than when you get asked to speak on a topic, and I'm very guilty of it. That I'll, if I haven't got notes to sort of jog my memory about what I want to say and keep to the point, I'll go off on a tangent and probably speak for 30 minutes rather than my allocated time. So I've got a few notes here. So Tradition 5 just explains that the primary purpose of every group is to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And you also put up the long form of the tradition, which is a little bit more explicit. Some of the long forms are quite lengthy compared to the short form, but this one isn't. It just simply says that each AA group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. So, what exactly is spirituality? If you ask 10 alcoholics, they'll all come up with different answers. For some, it's a religious thing. For some, it's a, it can be some sort of airy fairy thing. Everybody's got a different explanation, I think, of what spirituality actually is. And I struggled with this a little bit in the beginning. I found some people a bit off-putting when they were trying to force their religious views onto me. I think that's the worst thing you can do to an alcoholic in recovery, because to me, AA is not about religion, it is about spirituality. I remember one fellow telling me, and I think I was only in my first week of sobriety at the time, saying to me, and actually pointing the finger, saying, "If you don't get Jesus Christ, you won't get this." And I remember at the time thinking, I'm pretty sure I've got AA in India and, various Asian countries, where Christianity is not the major religion. So I just knew that was a load of rubbish. Your religion is your own business. I don't think AA has got anything to do with religion, organized religion. I like what Wayne Dyer said, and I read a lot of books in my early days on spirituality and what it meant. And like I said, everybody sort of has different opinions and beliefs. But I like what Wayne Dyer says. He says, you're a spiritual being having a human experience. And that made a lot of sense to me because I knew there was something inside of me that was a spirit. As a practicing alcoholic, that spirit was non-existent. It just wasn't there. But my absolute favourite quote is from Richard Attenborough. And for some of the younger people who haven't got a clue who Richard Attenborough is, everybody knows his younger brother, David, who's a very spiritual human being. What Richard Attenborough actually said was, there is a light in this world, a healing spirit more powerful than any darkness we may encounter. We sometimes lose sight of this force when there is suffering and too much pain. Then suddenly the spirit will emerge through the lives of ordinary people who hear a call and answer in extraordinary ways. And like I said, when I came into AA, my spirit was dead, but I walked into an AA meeting and met the people who were answering the call and were there to help me. So that quote's always stuck in my mind because I think it sums up what actually happens in AA. And we all experience dark times, you know, when we need to reach out for our spirit or, you know, other people's spirits can help you through. For me, the most difficult time in sobriety were the deaths of my parents and my younger brother, which just happened in a very short period of time, and also my daughter being diagnosed with breast cancer, which was a pretty horrific time because, you know, you have no idea what the outcome will be. It's a pretty dark time for anybody going through, you know, any kind of major illness. And you certainly need to be in touch with some sort of higher power to get you through that. And sometimes what can get you through is just somebody leaving a little cheery message on your answering machine, like just ringing up to say, how are you doing or whatever. It's, you know, pretty much like we've just had the Are You OK campaign. And I think we need to do that with alcoholics in early recovery because quite often they're not okay. You know, I certainly wasn't okay in my early days and I had lots of people just sometimes I couldn't answer the phone because I was, you know, in such a state, but just having somebody leave a message. And I've kept all those messages. They're on old-fashioned tapes, but I've kept all those messages that were left on my answering machine back in those early days, and they just helped so much. So what is the message that we're all supposed to be carrying? I think there's lots of messages, but they can all be condensed into one thing, which is hope. And that's the most important thing for an alcoholic in early recovery for me, is that there's some hope that things will get better. And as a female alcoholic entering AA for the first time, I was feeling pretty hopeless. I was a long-term drinker, a daily drinker. Life was a total mess. Marriage was ending. I had no job. I was physically very unwell and had no idea where I was going to go. You know, all I knew about then was drinking. You know, that was the first thing I did when I got up in the morning. I didn't get out of bed usually till midday. And that was my first thought, have a drink. And I just kept drinking all day long. And so when I heard people talking about the obsession to drink, I knew exactly what they were talking about. And what happened for me, it was a Sunday morning and I crawled out of bed. And for about the 500th time, I decided I'm not going to drink anymore. You know, so, I mean, how many times have we all said that? I'm never drinking again. And I certainly said it loads of times. And the ABC at that time were running a program on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was I think it was about 11 o'clock in the morning. And they were on the first step. And I started listening to it and I thought, that woman is you know, sort of talking about me in a lot of ways, not everything, but there were a lot of things, and I could relate to words like unmanageability, because, you know, my life was totally unmanageable, and powerless. And for so many years, I'd thought that I had some sort of power over alcohol, you know, that I could really stop drinking whenever I wanted. But, you know, I'd come to that point where I realised I couldn't. And I didn't know anything about the traditions back then. I didn't realise that they, all these people that were talking, were actors. I thought they were all members of Alcoholics Anonymous. So at the end, they put up a number that you could contact, and I rang it, and I decided that I would, and that was the first message that I got. It was not from an AA member, it was from an actor talking about the first step. And that was the message of hope, first message, a little glimmer of hope that things, you know, maybe I could do it. But the message I got was I couldn't do it alone. I needed to get some support to do it, which was actually the last thing I want. I wanted to do it by myself. Didn't want anybody to actually know. So I called AA, and I was told my eyes at the time had been really badly affected by alcohol. I suffered from night blindness. I couldn't drive. I couldn't see at night. I told them I only want to go to a meeting during the day. So they said, there's one quite close to you. You know, it's in a church, and they gave me the address, and it's on at 12 o'clock. And off I toddled. And to my horror, when I got to the church, there was one of those metal signs outside saying Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and an arrow saying Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in here. And I thought, well, that's not very anonymous. I'm not going in there. Everybody will see me and all the rest of it. So I actually called AA back and abused them. You know, why have you got signs outside your meeting? And that, and they were sort of patient and everything. They said, well, there is another one, but it is a nighttime meeting. And it was actually in the next suburb to me. So I plucked up courage, and I was very familiar with the road. So I went out and drove at night for the first time in I don't know how long, and got to the place and walked in. And again, to my horror, there was a very elderly lady in there. It was inside a church, and she was fiddling around with some pamphlets. And I thought, oh, she's somebody from the church. You know, she's going to ask me what do I want? And I can't tell her. So I'm mentally making up all the stories about why I'm there. And she said to me, are you here for the meeting? And she said, she told me her name, and she said, I'm an alcoholic, and people will start coming soon. Do you want a cup of coffee? And I think that was another message I got. Alcoholics aren't necessarily what my picture, even though I'm an alcoholic myself, my picture of an alcoholic was the old man with the dirty raincoat in the park drinking out of a bottle, you know, with a brown paper bag around it. You know, I couldn't relate myself to, I knew deep down I was an alcoholic, but I didn't think I was one of those types of alcoholics. So I went in, and I really was shivering and shaking at that first meeting. And I sat down, she gave me the coffee, and then people started coming in. And the first thing I noticed about these people were the clear skin and the clear eyes. And my skin looked like a road map, and my eyes were far from clear. And that was another message that I got from that meeting was, oh, you know, you can get healthy if you stop drinking. You can actually maybe look like these people. And then a woman said to me that she was 5.5 months sober. And that to me sounded like a lifetime of sobriety at the time. It's, you know, I thought, how can anybody not have had a drink for 5.5 months? and be looking like she's looking and looking quite happy about it. And then other people started coming in and started talking about being sober for years. I thought, well, you know, well, I just couldn't fathom how I was actually going to stay sober for that length of time. Because to me, alcohol, I still had it in my head that even though my life had been totally destroyed, alcohol was still fun for me. And the first meeting I went to was a steps meeting, and they were talking about the 11th step, most of which went over my head. But one thing I do remember is a man sharing about how he started his day in his garden with a cup of coffee, listening to his flowers and watering a few plants and listening to the birds. And it sounded so peaceful to me doing that, because there certainly hadn't been any peace in my life for a long time. And to me, that was a very attractive message, that message that my life could be peaceful. I wanted to be out in the garden looking at plants first thing in the morning instead of reaching for a bottle. So just another little message. And during the meeting, people were laughing. It was a really long time since I heard laughter. And so it was clear that these people had been sober a long time, most of them, and they were happy about it, and they'd got their lives back together, and they had something in their life that I didn't have, but I really wanted to have. So I decided I'd go back next week. And people at the end of the meeting gave me their phone numbers, and nobody really wanted to talk to me as an alcoholic. And I was surprised I didn't actually ring any of them for a long time, because I didn't quite know what to say. But, you know, just the fact that people gave me their numbers, it was just incredible. Gradually, I branched out into other meetings, including the one I'd been originally afraid to go to. And they were all ID meetings. And I learned how other people did the rounds of the bottle shops and had the problem of disposing of empty bottles. And the thing that struck me was they were all able to talk about this without any shame. And for, you know, I realise that men feel shame too, but as a mother and a woman, you know, when you're trying to get rid of your empties, you know, and don't want the neighbours to see or know what's going on behind your closed curtains, you do have this real sense of shame. And I thought I was the only one. You know, I didn't realise that other people were having exactly the same problems, that going to the different bottle shops so the man wouldn't know how much you were drinking. And they were all just little subtle messages to me that, you know, I'm not unique and I really don't need to be ashamed, because people started talking about it being an illness, not a bad habit or, you know, a weakness of willpower or whatever. They talked about it being an illness and something that had a treatment which was stopping. And the secret was to stay stopped. And they were there to help me do that. So in AA, in those meetings, I learned how to stop and stay stopped. And my life completely changed. I made friends. I didn't just go to local AA meetings. We used to go off to country rallies. And I sort of latched on to people that were happy. There were quite a lot of people that weren't very happy in meetings. I remember one fellow, and he used to say he'd been 2 years sober. Oh, and life's so hard. And, you know, if anybody's happy in their first 2 years of sobriety, they're not doing anything right, and blah, 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 blah. And I used to be quite depressed listening to him. Eventually I got to realise that not everybody has it easy. You know, people have sicknesses, they have all sorts of family traumas, and for some people life is very hard in the early days. that wasn't my case. It was just like being let out of jail for me. And it was just you know, they talk about a new freedom, and that's exactly what it was for me, a new freedom. Eventually I got a sponsor. I didn't hear much talk about sponsorship. In fact, it was a long time before I heard anybody talking about the big book. You know, it was just people sharing their stories, and that to me back then was really important. But I eventually got a sponsor, mainly because I thought, well, I should get one. She wasn't big on studying the big book. She just encouraged me to read it and let me know, you know, if there's anything you don't understand or something you want to talk about, that's what I'm here for. She made it quite clear from the beginning she wasn't going to be there to listen to my whinging about, you know, all the stuff that was going on in my life. And she wasn't going to give me advice about anything about other than staying stopped from drinking. But she did give me little pearls of wisdom, like, if you want to stay safe, stay in the middle, get in the middle. I said, well, what do you mean, get in the middle? And she said, well, if you think about it, if you're standing on a table and there's lots of other people on that table, the most unsafe place to be is on the edge. Get in the middle, get a home group, get involved, and get in the middle of it. And that's what I did. She also talked to me about service. She talked to me about the three legacies, and actually took me to quite a few service meetings, because she said, you know, you've got, it's not just about all about you. It's about giving back to, not just to other alcoholics, but to the fellowship as well. So I had a very good grounding in getting involved in service right from the word go. I'll go off a tangent a bit here, but when I was a kid, I loved the Jungle Book stories. And one thing that always stuck in my mind was Baloo teaching Mowgli about the various laws of the jungle, and in particular, the law that was taught to wolf cubs to help them survive. And I won't read the whole thing, but one line in it that I always loved for some reason, even when I was a kid, was the strength of the pack is the wolf, and the strength of the wolf is the pack. And years later, I understood how relevant that was to AA. You know, the group is so important, but the individual members of the group are important to the survival of the group too. So, and I think that was some sort of sign back then, which is why I loved that saying so much. And I remembered it, you know, right from the time I was a kid, that, you know, I understood right from the word go that importance of the group and the importance of the individual group members. And it is a jungle out there for us alcoholics, particularly in early recovery. And the group does offer life-saving protection to the newcomer, just as the law of the jungle protects the wolf cub. And the importance of chapter seven was also stressed to me, that the importance of working with other alcoholics, which is how our fellowship got started. You know, it wasn't just started by two men sitting there and chatting endlessly. It was about reaching out to for other alcoholics. So what were the messages that I got? I've talked about some of them, which have resulted in me not drinking for 28 years and not picking up a drink since my first meeting. They were si the simple messages, like the slogans that you see. And you know, the little words of wisdom that you get, go to as many meetings as possible, pick up the phone, don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, read the literature, and don't drink one day at a time or one hour at a time if that's what it takes. Somebody said to me, oh, look, exercise is great. When you're feeling like a drink, exercise is great. So never want to overdo it. I don't just go walking around or bike riding or swimming. I take up Taekwondo, which is really, for somebody that hasn't done exercise for a long time, a martial arts, okay. I didn't realize what was going on. So that certainly helped at doing martial arts. And then there was a banner on the wall of our meeting, which contained the promises. And I read through them all and believed every one of them. The importance of reaching out to people was stressed, you know, that public information. I belonged to a group that was big on public information. Every doctor's surgery, every police station, every hospital had information on AA and how to contact it. And I was up in Toowoomba one time, and there was a, it was a dark, foggy night, Toowoomba sort of on top of a mountain. And you had to drive really slowly to get there safely. And an old man was there talking about the cat's eyes in the road that led us all to that meeting. And he talked about public information being like the cat's eyes in the road. The public information is what leads the newcomer through the fog to AA, where they can get the message. So, sorry, I've gone on long. I've tried to carry that message of hope. I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to be part of a group carrying the message to women in India, asked to go, and almost 100 of us went, and which was the most fantastic experience, and also to people in Fiji who had nothing, huge alcohol problem, but nowhere to turn. And now they actually have an office there, some well-established meetings, and they're thriving. So thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Valerie, for your share. For those who have come in late, the topic for tonight is Tradition 5. Tradition 5, long form. Each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 12 and 12 Traditions Book, page 150. So I'll hand over now to the speaker number 2, which is John C.
Sure, thank you. My name is John. I'm a secular alcoholic, and my date of sobriety is the 7th of January, 2007. I actually earlier on just wrote down the short form of Tradition 5. But before we get to that part, the traditions weren't called the traditions in the first instance. Bill put together an article in Grapevine magazine in 1946, and they were called An Alcoholic's Tradition of Relations, 12 Points to Assure Our Future. And I think that phrase, to assure our future, was vital. When Dr. Bob met Bill, neither of them were aware of the Washingtonians because they had slipped from view. And we said he didn't want to go the way of the Washingtonians, but obviously Bill found out about them later on. So he probably had them in mind, other organizations like the Emmanuel Group. When it says in Tradition 5 in the short form, each group has one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. So the first we dissect it, the tradition, first thing is, what is an alcoholic? And in our basic text, the big book on page 30, it says we learned that we had to concede to our innermost selves that we're alcoholics. So what it's saying and suggesting very strongly, it's a case of self-diagnosis, because we all know you can tell an alcoholic, and I was no different, you can tell an alcoholic anything, but you certainly can't tell them much. At the convention where the traditions were adopted, the first international convention, which was held in Cleveland, July the 20th, 28th to the 30th, 1950, and Dr. Bob attended, and one of the reasons why it was held in Cleveland was that it had a number of strong AA groups, but more importantly, Dr. Bob sadly was gravely ill with cancer at that time, and he died in November of that year, but he came to the convention and he spoke briefly. Now, sorry, pardon me. So now that we've sort of, I think, established what an alcoholic is, case of self-diagnosis by necessity, obviously, the question is, who can we help? That's the vital question. Because sometimes in AA, the water's been muddied. by people who are well-intended. I just turned to a quote that Bill wrote again in, sounds like I got a subscription to Grapevine magazine, I think about 1961 or 62. He wrote, "Now, there are certain things that AA cannot do for anybody, regardless of what our several desires or sympathies may be. I mean, our first duty as a society is to ensure our own survival." I think that's certainly a reflection of the fifth tradition, that's for sure. "Therefore, we have to avoid distractions and multi-purpose activity." So he's obviously thinking of the Washingtonians, et cetera, et cetera. "An AA group as such cannot take on all the personal problems of its members, let alone the problems of the whole world. Sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps is the sole purpose of an AA group." So we have it in a nutshell. That's all we do. And that's how we do it. "Groups have repeatedly tried other activities and they have always failed. It has to be, it had also been learned that there's no possible way of making non-alcoholics into AA members. We have to confine our membership to alcoholics and we have to confine our AA groups to a single purpose. If we don't stick to these principles, we shall almost certainly collapse. And if we collapse, we cannot help anyone." And that last sentence is vital. "Because if we're not here, we can't help anyone. Pretty simple. Therefore, I see no way of making a non-alcoholic addicts into AA members." Pardon me. "Experience says loudly that we can admit no exceptions, even though drug users and alcoholics happen to be first cousins of a sort. If we persist in trying this, I'm afraid it'll be hard on the drug user himself as well as on AA. We must accept the fact that no non-alcoholic, whatever his affliction, can be converted into an alcoholic AA member." At the convention in 1950, there was a lawyer, his name I just can't remember, he's from Toledo, Ohio, and he spoke on the fifth tradition. And what he sort of summed it up by saying, "Renouncing self for the greater good of all." And I think that's vital because, as we know, alcoholics are selfish and self-centered. So we have another look at the tradition. It mentions carrying the message. Well, what is our message? You've got to carry the right message. And people say, and it's well meant, because they heard it in the meeting or whatever, but it might necessarily be in our basic text. Some people will say meetings, meetings, meetings. Clarence Snyder, who founded AA in Cleveland in 1939, remembered Dr. Bob saying, "There's an easy way and a hard way to recover, and the hard way is just by going to meetings." If we look at what the big book says on page 159, 160, it says it became customary to set aside one night a week for a meeting for everyone and anyone interested in a spiritual way of life. And sometimes we hear, More so these days than when I first came into the fellowship. I've not been in the fellowship that long compared to a lot of other people, that's for sure. 90 meetings in 90 days. In the January edition of Grapevine, 1959, there was some discussion about a 90-day trial period. It was felt it ran counterintuitive to the fellowship because the principle of we just have today. And I think when a newcomer comes along and if it's suggested 90 meetings in 90 days and they're having problems staying off the drink more than 5 minutes, that will seem overwhelming. And 90 meetings in 90 days isn't in the first 164 pages of our basic text. It's not in the 12 by 12. Yeah. I read a quote which I thought was pertinent. It said, "Meetings are what you need, but going in itself won't get people sober, like going to the grocery store in itself won't cook your dinner." Now, a message is hidden in plain sight. And it's true. Rarely have we seen a person fail that's thoroughly followed our path. So I get the question is, what is our path? It goes on a bit more on page 58 that, you know, if you're prepared to go to any length, then you are ready to take certain steps. And that's the message of AA, the steps. It's nothing else. And to me, the steps mean starting to establish peace and serenity. Just on my personal experience for the first 5 months in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a lunatic of a sponsor, me. In other words, the ism I sponsor me and the Frank Sinatra method my way. Well, it didn't work for 5 months. It hadn't worked before I got here, and it certainly wasn't working for the first 5 months. And it wasn't until I listened to the man who was supposed to be my sponsor, and I sat myself, that and I started the steps, that I begin to recover. And I was heading for a drink, but I decided to go to my sponsor's house instead. And I'm very, very pleased. I'm very, very pleased that I did that, because the steps have saved my, and the steps have saved my life. In terms of, you know, some people, you hear people say, AA doesn't work. It's interesting, because the University of Stanford in 2019 did a study, and I'll just read a little bit of it. It's interesting. And as you know, the modern term for alcoholism use disorder, it says, confers a prodigious burden of disease, disability, premature mortality, and high economic costs from lost productivity, accidents, violence, incarceration, increased health care utilization. Over 80 years, AA has been a widespread AUD recovery organization with millions of members and treatment free at the point of access, but it's only recently that rigorous research on the effectiveness has been conducted. And with this study, it was done basically to, the objectives were to evaluate whether peer-led AA and professionally delivered treatments that facilitate AA involvement, in other words, 12-step facilitation interventions in the clinical setting, achieve important outcomes, you know, abstinence, reduced drinking, et cetera, reduced alcohol-related consequences, addiction severity, and healthcare cost offsets. And they used, organization searched the Cochrane Drugs and Alcohol Group Specialized Register, which is the penultimate. And the results, it was interesting because they studied, there were 27 studies that had 10,565 participants, ages ranged from 34 to 51 years. And the conclusion was interesting. It said that the Cochrane Review, which is, as I said, the penultimate, that you don't get any better than that, assessed the effectiveness and cost benefits of Alcoholics Anonymous and clinically delivered 12-step facilitation interventions for alcohol use disorder. And it summarized the key findings and discussed the implications for practice and policy. And in a nutshell, Alcoholics Anonymous, in terms of the continuous abstinence remission, AA was superior to anything that was clinically delivered. So we came out in front. So there's the proof. So when you hear someone say, it doesn't work, mate. No, I tried it. Did you? No. But anyway, as I said earlier on, you can tell an alcoholic, but you can't tell them much. When we look at the tradition, you know, do we ever sort of cop out by saying, I'm not a group, so this tradition doesn't apply to me? Well, you're part of a group, so I think it might. Or are you willing to explain firmly to a newcomer the limitations of AA help, even if he gets mad at you for not giving him a loan, giving him a place to live, or buying him a meal? You know, we have to say, this is what we do and this is what we don't do. Otherwise, we're veering away from our purpose in life. And then if we ask ourselves, am I willing to 12-step the next newcomer without regard of who or what is in it for me? Because, again, we go back to that selfishness and self-centeredness. That's for sure. And do I help my group in every way that I can fulfill our primary purpose? I think that's a pretty good summation. The other thing, another aspect is, do I remember that, old-timers too can be alcoholics who still suffer. And do I try to help them, and do I try to learn from them? In terms of carrying the message, Jimmy Thatcher said something, and I think it's right on the money. I mean, always trust the message, but not always the messenger. I think is that true? So the question is, how do we carry the message? Well, if you're new, you might like to, you know, after a little while, you might like to ask your sponsor, and it's a good idea to have one. People point out the big book doesn't mention the word sponsor, but there is a chapter called Working with Others. And if you read the Akron manual, that's certainly, you know, you're one alcoholic working with another. That's, you know, fairly obvious. Maybe just start off in a position like a door greeter. And you think, well, I don't know anything, but the person who's coming through the door for the first time will know even less than you do, even if you're a few weeks sober. And it also helps give you a feeling of being a part of your home group. And there are many other ways over the years. I've tried just a few of these, I must admit, but going. It's hard now with COVID, obviously, around the local hospital with the AA brochure with the local intergroup phone number on it. Libraries, you can drop stuff around libraries, institutions, law enforcement, the not-for-profit agency, like the Salvos, etc. And what, and when you, you know, completed the steps and had a little bit of experience, public speaking at clubs, just to carry our message. And that's very good. You know, and institutions like you know, jails, and just carry the message. And when you go to speak to people, not everyone will get the message, but that's okay. You're still sober at the end of it, and hopefully some of them will, and that's important. And I think that we've been entrusted to carry a very powerful message of recovery, and we explain it simply by the formula that's on page 58 and how it works. As Bob said, keep it simple, don't louse it up. But our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. And that's very true. Because if we stick to what it was like, what it was like, what it was like, the newcomer will think, I don't know what to do, but I like the drinking stories. I just went to meetings and drinking stories, mainly for the first 5 months, and I had no idea of anything. I thought, oh, that's funny, but I wasn't getting any better. In fact, I was getting considerably worse. Then when it says, I'll just repeat what I said earlier, but it's very important. If you decided you want what we have and are willing to go to get it, then you need to take certain steps. I think that the traditions are there to protect AA and us from ourselves. That might sound ironic, but alcoholics certainly get that and live a quiet, you can have a quiet chuckle at that. I mean, in AA, we do not deal with any disease called addiction. We only deal with an illness called alcoholism. We use terms like sober, sobriety, alcohol, drinking, alcoholic, alcoholism, etc., to describe ourselves and our experiences. And we use these terms in an effort to maintain AA unity and to keep to our single purpose. I just close on a quote from Bill, and it's in the 12 by 12. And it just sums up the fifth tradition very, very neatly. He said, it's better to do one thing supremely. It's better to do one thing supremely well than many things badly. I think that sums it up. And just to say some little form of editorial fairness, just to close on a quote from Dr. Bob, my good friend Tony Mack, and Paul T is here tonight, which I'm very pleased about. On the last substantive paragraph of page 181, Dr. Bob said three very simple words: "It never fails." I think the good doctor hit the nail on the head. I appreciate the chance of sharing at the meeting tonight. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks again, John, for your share.
So I'll now close with the Serenity Prayer. God grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference.